Welcome to the Fan Experience Experience with Darren and Mark and a special guest.
Hello and welcome to season two of the Fan Experience Experience podcast, the podcast about all things fan experience that is now into its second series. Obviously, we had so many people we could interview that it was never all going to fit into series one. So here is series two, which will hopefully take us from the midst of COVID into the post-COVID world where we can get back into stadiums. It's been an interesting time, hasn't it, Darren? What have you been up to recently?
Well, as you well know, we haven't been quite as busy in the last few months as we'd have liked to have been. So I've been doing some other things on top of the work we've been doing with the Fan Experience Company. So it's given me, if nothing else, it's given me a little bit of time to finish my second book. So I'm just at the end of that now, and I've actually been doing some editing in the last couple of hours.
All right, so this is the follow-up to Child Taken, that massively popular book. I mean, check it out on Amazon. I think it's got, for the number of reviews there, to have that the star rating it does. But seriously, though, I can recommend it. It's a real page-turner. And speaking of books, we've got somebody that we're going to talk to in this first episode, somebody who has a book out this week and someone who's very dear to us. It's our voiceover man. It's Cameron Hughes. Cameron, how are you?
Great to join you guys. I'm doing really well. It's been a fun week. It's been a fun 26 years too.
It has. Yeah, and we'll get to that. I guess the first question is, where are you?
I'm in Victoria, British Columbia. Beautiful Vancouver Island in Canada. I'm from Ottawa, but lived in California, but decided to have a little break.
Well, that's not a bad place to choose. I was trying to figure out, you're 8 hours behind us, I think, if it's 9 a.m. where you are. So listen, a lot of people who know us will know you because we share your stuff and we talk about you a lot. But in one sentence, how would you describe what it is that you do?
I ignite fans to participate more at a more spirited level.
I love that. That's a good one. And we met.
Did anyone write that down?
yeah, exactly. I mean, I have to say that, you know, saying that is so different to actually seeing you in action. And in the trailer for your new book, The King of Cheer, which is kind of a life story of this remarkable journey, which we'll ask you to describe in a little while. You say that you never made the hockey pick, but you actually made it to the NHL. I think you got the sportsmanship award in basketball, but you made it to the NBA, and you weren't very good at tennis either, but you ended up at Flushing Meadow. And it's kind of a strange story. It begins somewhere near Montreal, I believe, when you were attending a hockey game as an 18-year-old kid. Is that right?
Yeah, I was early 20s in Ottawa, my hometown, trying to figure out what to do with my life. And I love crowds. I always love crowds. You know, as a young kid, I remember going to the CFL football games, which is the NFL version in Canada. And I remember seeing this guy getting the crowd going at an early age, probably 11. I remember saying to my dad, look at that, that guy's amazing. And I just had this feeling about it. It was really weird. Like some people see an actor perform or a writer or, you know, I don't know, different athletes. I just saw this guy. I was like, wow, it resonated with me. And I got up that night at that game in Ottawa for the NHL and I decided to do something about the crowd not being engaged. And I danced like a lunatic. So people are like, oh, did you plan that? I'm like, are you kidding me? No, I would never plan to come to a game and dance and get the crowd going.
I guess the old security people were probably more concerned than anything else, weren't they? They'd be trying to remove you from the arena. Yeah.
Well, they didn't really know what was going on either because I started in my seat and then the next whistle, I went over to the aisle. And the fans were so with me that the security, you know, the ushers at the top of the stairs, you know, it wasn't like it is now, like the security and all that. So they just kind of let me go. And thankfully, because I went from my seat to the aisle, which is, you know, really why I believe it worked. Because if I just stayed in my seat, it would have been a funny moment.
I mean, I've seen black and white video. And in fact, I think it does appear on your little promo video of a young kid doing a chicken dance in black and white. Is that the one?
That's, yeah, we'll call it the chicken dance. Yeah. I mean, I, you know, look, I had no idea what I was doing. I just kept moving. I kept going. It's like, once you get up, you got to keep doing it. And the crowd came along, and it was this, you know, magical timing as well. Magical moment. The team was down. The fans wanted something. I think that's, you know, guys, if I really look deep down into the psychology behind what happened that night, they wanted to be more engaged in the experience, right? They just needed something. And I think when we all go to events of any kind, I even think from like a wedding to, you know, to a soccer match to whatever it might be, cricket, there's moments where you're just waiting. You're anticipating the, hey, let me come along for the ride with everyone here. And let's cheer together. Let's celebrate together. Is that, you know what I mean? Like, and sometimes you have to force that on your fans need to force that on themselves, you know, to create those moments.
So how, Cameron, did you go from that, which sounds brilliant in itself? And I love the bit on your website where is it Elliot says, I begged him not to dance, which I really love. But how do you then go from that to just suddenly thinking, hey, that's got a reaction? How do you then go to, what's the next step after that?
Well, yeah, it was funny. My buddy that was with me was like, no, please don't. And, you know, of course, now 26 years later, he's like my biggest fan, saying how you know, how funny it was, how amazing it was. And the team came up to me afterwards. You know, they came up to me right after at the end of the game. I always joke with people, I thought they were going to kick me out. And I'm like, the game's already over. Come on. And then they asked me to come back and just start dancing in the aisles. And I was like, okay. And then I started to bring t-shirts to the games, my own t-shirts, to promote a t-shirt company I have. And then I went to Toronto, and then Toronto was like, they loved it. I got some national exposure. And then the Toronto Maple Leafs were like, well, we want you to wear the Toronto Maple Leafs, not your own shirts. And I was like, oh, maybe I'm onto something with the t-shirts.
Yeah, and of course the journey, 27, 28 years ago was that? It's certainly a long time ago, wasn't it?
That was 26 years ago in Ottawa. And then, you know, I went to Toronto after, then I started showing up at other venues.
And it's not just other venues as well, because I've seen you do Just for Laughs as the warm-up guy in Montreal. Is that right? Yeah.
Yeah. I had a great, I host the opening of Just for Laughs, the big festivals. I've actually had some great moments with some British artists, Jimmy Card, to name a few. Getting the crowds fired up. I mean, that's my thing. And I think, you know, I've tried to do a lot of other things in my career, but when I go back to what I've had the most success with, it's changing the state of crowds, you know, if I really had to nail it.
Yeah. And guess, you know, one of the things that Darren and I, you know, talk about a lot right now is, you know, when we get people back, they're going to miss that kind of communion, that being with other people. And we've always talked about the fact that the fan experience itself is often, I guess, subconsciously much more important to the fan than actually what happens on the field or on the rink or whatever. You've really centered on that and really brought that to life. And, it, you know, there are people sat there waiting for you to spring up from wherever you are.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that if, you know, on a deeper level, I mean, people, you leave a sporting event, even if your team loses, you like, I think you know, I mean, yes, there's some fans that take it a lot more, you know, intensely than others, but you ultimately, I believe, you know, you feel better. Those 2-3 hours of an escape, your emotional, like your heartbeats, you know, racing, you're connecting with your friends, you're connecting with a bigger community, you've got your team jersey on, you know, like, so it's like, you know, that connection you feel towards that experience is real. And yeah, I mean, I miss it. You miss it. I think fans miss it. And we need that as humans, you know, we need to let go like that. And I just try to get the best out of people. And that's what I've, you know, always focused on.
And I totally agree. And I think that one of the things that's going to really happen as we get into this period where people are going to start to be coming back to stadiums, certainly in the UK, when they do, is they're going to realise how much they've missed that. Because I think that there's almost an assumption that they go because they want to see their team win. And I think they're probably going to think, actually, there's something missing here. And actually what it was exactly what you just described, Cameron, that enjoyment and that sort of 2 or 3 hours of feeling really good about themselves and doing something that fit in with a lot more people. And I think that's what's going to make a big difference when they all come back.
I think that's a really good point. I think it's, you know, the score of the game, I think, you know, I mean, for some games, for sure, you'll remember. But, you know, 6 months from that event, do you really remember who won or lost? You know, I mean, for sure, you know, in some cases, yes, you do. But you're right. It's that feeling you get, you know, and I, and, you know, I've done some events and over, you know, around the world talking about creating feelings, right? I mean, that's what you guys do. And that's what I want to do. I want to make you feel more part of the experience.
And what you also do, of course, is you make the sportsmen or women that are performing, you know, go better. Darren has done a lot of background study on this whole idea of win when you're singing, which kind of subverts a chant that English football fans use. The idea that, you know, if there's a real raucous noise at the times of high pressure and an opportunity to score a goal or a point or whatever it is, you know, players do perform better when they have all of these people screaming at them. And I think probably the best example of this, it's got to be a certain Novak Djokovic. Is that right?
Yeah, there's a bit of a history there.
Wait, you're kind of buddies now, aren't you?
Yeah, well, we had a pretty funny moment at the US Open in 2011. We had a dance off in the hallway.
as one does. Yeah.
Yeah, of course you do. He was interviewed in his post-game match. He said, I don't want to talk about tennis. I want to talk about that guy dancing. He points to me, and the US Open brings me out to meet him when he comes out of his press conference, and we had a great moment. And then over the years, he would give me a shout-out here and there when he was performing. He'd do a little dance. And then in 2015 was kind of the moment that kind of glued it all together. It was after his match. It was early rounds of the US Open. There's 22,000 people there. And the host says, oh, yeah, your buddy was there dancing again. And Novak starts talking about me. And then they see me in the crowd. And next thing I know, I'm on center court at the US Open live on ESPN, getting the crowd fired up with Novak Djokovic. It was amazing. And I think back to what you said, I mean, in that moment is like, they feed off it. So it's like you watch these events from the tennis to soccer to the NBA, NHL, and these guys have to dig deep, you know, guys, women, have to dig deep at a whole other level to get their, you know, adrenaline going. You know, I mean, yes, they're professional, but you watch it, you listen to them, they're like, where's the crowd after the big goal or a big play to keep them going, right? That's the thing, you know? Of course they get excited, but they got to keep going. And I think that it'll be interesting to see how athletes perform when it does come back.
It was one of the questions I was going to ask you, Cameron, and when Mark brought up the sing when you're winning thing, what we found was that when we went to games where there was the crowd were really, really up for it before the game started, there was a very early goal in nearly all of those games, and particularly the teams that did it and the club actually did something to make that happen. There was one particular club in the Netherlands who seemed to score in the first few minutes of every game, every home game. And I just wondered what your thoughts were on that. I mean, because obviously, you know, there's the what you're doing is getting the crowd ignited, but how much of an impact do you think that has on the, you know, on the fact that the teams can actually do better because of it? And because it makes you wonder why teams aren't exploiting that more.
Well, yeah, I mean, you look at some of the numbers, you know, I believe it was close to 60, early 60% of teams in the NHL, and I think maybe high 50s in the NBA, you know, win at home. And, you know, I think that fluctuated a bit, but I was doing games. I remember doing games in Buffalo, New York for a hockey team, and they won 10 games in a row when they brought me in. And they were like, bring him back, bring him back, bring him back. Look, I mean, the crowd does make a difference. I mean, you, like you said, I mean, you come out there and, you know, the adrenaline of the home crowd. And I've talked to athletes from minor league teams to the major leagues, and they feed off it. And I have talked to some athletes, like high-level athletes, who have said, I can't believe how dead our crowd was tonight. And they're like, they're genuinely upset. They're like, why weren't the fan base behind us, you know? And so, yeah, I think they play a huge role. And I think they've got to learn to listen to the crowd to the crowd as well, as a fan, you know?
Listening to you talk, listen to Darren talk there, I think we were talking about Heracles in the Eredivisie, which is the top tier of football in the Netherlands. But then again, maybe all these clubs were playing Venlo. That's possibly another explanation for the home team scoring early. But that's an in-joke for those of us who follow Dutch football. But think, taking this story to the book here, you're obviously well-known. You're a person bringing to life experiences and stadiums. People don't see you as a picture. They see you as a video. You're always moving. You're always there. You're making lots of noise. You're getting everybody going. How have you put that into a book? How hard was it to get that, to get those fingers typing, and what have been the themes that have come out as you've actually gone look back over these last 27 years?
Well, I mean, it's a great question. It's, you know, I think for me, as soon as I've been wanting to do it for a while, and I've had a diary of different stories and moments just so I don't forget them. And then over 2 years ago, when I fully decided to do it, it started to take shape in the sense of, I wanted to be two things. I wanted to be where if I was at a bar or sitting beside you on a plane or at a cocktail party, and you were like, oh, tell me about that time you went to Belfast or Singapore or, you know, US Open. I didn't want it to be like a 10-minute story. I wanted it to be like a fun, like you're come along for the ride, you know, page or two here and there. But while I was doing that, I wanted it to also have a narrative of like, you know, like you said, Mark, I didn't make those teams, but I figured out a way to contribute to a lot of them. And I think through that, I wanted people to come along and put their own story in my story in some ways. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And really, if you did that, the whole idea is to cheer yourself on, right? And that's my message, because there's been many nights along the way in this road where I didn't feel it, but I had to dig deep and cheer myself on. And my whole thing is, if when you do cheer yourself on, the crowd will respond to that energy, to you putting yourself out there. And so I really wanted to make that part of the book and part of the experience of writing the book. And look, I don't just talk about the highs of being at the NBA Finals or, you know, at center court. There's a lot of different challenges and moments behind the scenes of trying to, quote unquote, make it, you know, and putting yourself out there in life. And I think, you know, for me, it's about the journey that I want to bring people on, you know?
You just made me think then when you said that. I mean, how did you find the differences when you came to England? Because that was that about 2015, was it?
Well, 20, yeah, I've been there a couple times for rugby and also for hockey. So it was around 2013 for hockey, 2014, 15 for rugby.
And how did you, what did you think was the differences with the crowd and the way that the crowd's relationship with the teams?
Oh, I mean, that's a great question. I talk a bit about it in the book. I mean, you know, I'll just tell you a story, then I'll go into it. But Mark was there in Leeds where I did a rugby game. The first time I got up was like before the match started. So that in itself is different than a North American sporting event. And it took about, I don't know, Mark, a minute and a half, maybe?
No, actually, it wasn't, but it was the longest 35 seconds ever. We were up in the Carnegie stand there at the Headingley Stadium, and Sean Jones, we've got to say thanks to Sean for bringing you over. We were willing you on, you'd got yourself all warmed up, and you came and you stood up as the disco music subsided, and there was this moment where there were lots of bemused Yorkshiremen kind of go, what's he doing? Should we call a steward? Should we get him moved? And send to their kids, don't go near that strange man, you know? And suddenly the kids realized what you were doing. The kids started jumping up and down. They got going. The people around you got going. But then most miraculously, I was sat about, Luis and I were probably about, I don't know, 10 yards away from you, but way down at the left, there's the terrace where everybody's standing. And that's really the kind of the hardcore, kind of the ultra, the long-standing, you know, noisy fans of Leeds Rhinos, and they were beckoning you down. And the last thing I saw of you, you were doing a kind of Peter Gabriel-style crowd surf into the distance, and we thought we'd never find you again. You know, you'd be taken home by someone and kept in a backyard prison in Bath. but you came out and you did the same thing a couple of nights later at Wigan Warriors, and there were people on Twitter at both Leeds and Wigan saying, "Bring him back. Bring him back," you know, and we let out this kind of this group sigh of relief, because, you know, you were worried about it, the natural reserve of the English, but also tie that into the kind of religious ceremony of the match. And we can't have any of this American stuff going on. You know, this is about This is about hard grit and struggle. But it was an absolute overwhelming success.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was funny because ultimately what the goal is, like, you know, ultimately it's to win over the crowd, but it's to make people laugh, cheer, dance, and smile. And, you know, there's times in my career where that takes, you know, there's challenges. There's the timing. There's the fans aren't into it. They're not used to it. But ultimately what I've learned in this whole journey is the crowd in Leeds, as much as a rugby game in Singapore or a minor league hockey game in, you know, in Texas, what do fans want, right? And they want to feel something different, in my opinion. So that spontaneous moment, like, had they introduced me in Leeds, it would not have worked. Ladies and gentlemen, check out section 124. He's going to get up and dance and he's going to cheer and you're going to love it. You'd be like, what?
Yeah, we know.
Right? So one thing I've really wanted to project into the sports entertainment world is to create more of those experiences. Rip up the script, you know? You can almost, like, you could do a podcast called Rip Up the Script, you know, and it's basically the point is that all these directors of entertainment and fan experience across Europe and North America, it's like they're so stuck on, oh, we got to read this sponsorship ad. Well, your team just scored, right?
Yeah.
Let's say it's at a big soccer match somewhere. Your team just scored and you're going to go read a thing for a petrol company. And you're like, no, you're not. You're going to pump the music up. And I think that's the big thing that I've experienced, where you need to be able to adapt to the crowd and listen to the crowd, you know? And with that, I'll add one quick thing is I've also learned when not to get up. If that, you know, do you know what I mean, guys? Like,
yeah, of course.
Just let the crowd breathe and let them own these moments as well.
Just one quick question, Cameron, that might help some of the listeners in terms of people at clubs in England. What one piece of advice would you give someone who's at a club now and is responsible for sort of improving the atmosphere, if you like? What would be the one piece of advice you'd give them?
I would say, without a doubt, I would look at them in the eye and say, try something different each game. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So try something different and push it. Like, a friend of mine hired me to do a game in Bakersfield, California, 16 years ago. Okay. And he wrote in a book, he made a great quote in the book. He said, we knew we'd have them. It would be fun. Worst case scenario, it bombed, which would still be fun.
I think,
and by the way, I'm just to finish, I've done 65 games there.
We love that. We have a very dear friend who lives and works on the Estonian-Russia border, Alex Dmitriev. And he's a fantastic guy. You know, he's taken crowds up 300-400% in the football club in that particular town. And he's kind of taken some risks over this period of time. And he's got a kind of a watchword that he goes by, and that is, it's easier to apologize than it is to ask permission first.
Well, 100%. And fans often don't know what is happening. So if it doesn't work, okay, well then you just next. Right? Well,
Cameron, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on here. We need to see each other more often. We need to use this video call function that the whole world's adapted to and do a little bit more of that. I want to thank you. I want to wish you luck. What's coming next for you now? What's around the corner when we get fans back? You got anything new planned, or you've already got people queuing up to have you?
You know, I've had a lot of different conversations and interest. You know, for me, I was probably going to slow down, but now in a way I want to kind of speed up and I want to get out there even more and connect with people. And as you said, and both of you said, we're going to want to connect and have those moments and shared experiences at another level. And I will say this, like, turn up the volume, you know, turn up the volume, rip up the script, and let's celebrate together. And I appreciate your support over the years. And, you might even see some of your names in the book. What?
Yeah.
I appreciate the support and the fun, and let's keep spreading the cheer.
Darren, any final words from you?
Well, I think you can definitely carry on doing the voiceovers after that. So.
Oh, thank you. Was this an official audition?
You were just on probation for the first season. But hey, listen, everyone. This has been Cameron Hughes. It's been Mark Bradley. It's been Darren Young on the Fan Experience Podcast, Season 2. You can find us at www.fanexperienceco.com. You can follow us on Twitter at fanexperienceco, and you can listen to this podcast at the Spotify and all of the other major podcasting hosting thingamajigs. But I want to tell you finally that you can get Cameron's book at Amazon. You can get it very easily there. But if you'd like it personalized, you'd like an autograph and you want to dedicate it to a friend, you can actually go to Cameron direct at CameronHughes.tv to do that. At Cameron Cheers is where you'll find Cameron on Twitter as well. It's always worth a visit. He's fantastic on Instagram, a fantastic person to follow. It's been a real pleasure having you with us today, Cameron. You take care of yourself.
Thank you, guys. Big cheers.
And to everybody, yeah, good luck with the book. And to everyone else listening, thanks for tuning in. And we'll see you next time on the Fan Experience Experience.
And don't forget to check out our new website at fanexperienceco.com. The Fan Experience Experience was recorded live. See you next time.